Blog Talk Radio.
This is Mike Roth. Welcome to Open Forum in the Villages. In this show, we're going to talk to leaders in the community, leaders of clubs, interesting folks who live in the villages, to give a perspective of what's happening here in the villages and information that I think all villagers should have. We hope to add a new episode every Friday at 9 a.m.
Frank, I didn't tell you that I insert a joke into every show. This is Mike Roth. I'm here today with Frank Lance Ioane.
Lance Ioane.
This is Mike Roth. I'm here with Frank Lance Ioane. Thanks for joining me, Frank.
You're welcome.
In today's show, we're going to cover a myriad of topics. But before we start, I'm going to remind everyone that on the second and fourth Friday nights of the month here in the villages from 7 to 9 p.m., I'm part of a new group called Boomer Humor Review. And that's a place where people can do stand-up comedy, sketch comedy, musical parody. So it's a fun time for both the performers and the guests who come. So I'd like to put a joke into every one of these shows, Frank. What did one math, you're a writer, so what did one math book say to the other?
Doesn't add up.
That's good. My math books say, I've got so many problems. Okay. Let's tell our audience, Frank, about you. Frank Lance Ioane is a frequent moderator for the Civil Discourse. Take two. Frank Lance Ioane is a frequent moderator for the Civil Discourse Club South, and he has recently completed a 90-day around the United States trip via RV. You might not know that before he came to the villages, he was a top manager in the computer revolution or the turn of the century. Frank fell into the technology field by accident. He was studying for his doctorate in literature when he realized there were not many jobs for that field. So when he got married, he decided to try to get a job teaching at a community college. And Frank said there were no jobs. Frank earned his bachelor's degree in American literature from Canisius College in Buffalo, New York.
Canisius, the Jesuits will never forgive you.
Oh, well. Canisius, take two. Frank earned his bachelor's degree in American literature from Canisius College in Buffalo, New York. He did his graduate work at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana, where he met his wife, Diane. That's a beautiful campus at Bloomington. I've been there. He writes for the Monday edition of the Daily Sun. How long have you done that, Frank?
I don't write for the Daily Sun.
Huh. I'm not getting there.
I hope you're editing
this story. Yes, we will edit that. Frank doesn't write for the Daily Sun. Okay. Moving on. Frank, I understand that you recently finished a book of poetry here in the villages. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, it's first of all, let me kind of set the context. I have two clubs. One is called Civil Discourse South, which is sort of a club for TED Talks. The other is called Wine and Words, and that's kind of an entertainment venue. And in the process of that, I became allied with the Writers League of the Villages. So the context is this. There's a lot of smart people in the villages. And we all did interesting things when we were working. And people don't turn their minds off when they're retired. They actually now can turn them on to new problems. So I'm one of those folks. I used to dabble a little bit here and there with writing because I did have undergraduate work with that.
Mm-hmm.
But in a 42-year career, I was focused very much on business and pretty intense. And I got to be a senior vice president, so I didn't have much time. In retirement, and particularly as I started getting to be about 70, as that was approaching, I started reflecting on life and found, you know what? Poetry was a good way to condense your thoughts and force you to think. So I took what I've written over the last couple of years and put them together, and I've got a book in draft.
She's going to open a door. It should be picked up by the microphone. So then it's just going to close the garage door, which is going to be picked up. Okay, you can leave. There's the garage door going up. You learn something new in every recording. This garage door is what I'm learning on this one. Lots of times she's not been in the house when I've done these recordings. And I don't want to test the noise filter to see whether it kills the garage door.
It's amazing.
I didn't hear it go down. So do you remember where you were?
Let me restart with a line.
Okay.
There is a tremendous pool of people in the villages, highly, highly talented. People who did really interesting, challenging things when they were working. And they still are those same people in retirement. And so they don't just sit on the front porch in a rocker and try to see who's going by in their cart. They go out and do things. I have a couple of clubs. One is called Civil Discourse South. You can think of it as kind of like a TED Talk type of club. People come in and they prepare talks of about 20 to 30 minutes. The topics are wide-ranging and they're fascinating. We had a guy who talked about the war between AC and DC current, which was the war between Tesla and George Westinghouse. And at that time, they were fighting to see who was going to dominate the world standards. We've had talks on the death of the cash society. We've had talks on the comparison between the Black Death and COVID, which was really interesting. So fascinating talks there. Fascinating literary society here and culture in the villages. So I'm allied with the Writers League of the Villages, and I participate in that. I also have a club called Wine and Words. It meets the first Thursday of the month at Riverbend. And it's not a club. It's really an entertainment venue.
Mm-hmm.
We set it up like a cafe. You come in, you bring adult snacks and adult beverages, and we have a kind of an area that's a low tables and chairs, and I interview authors. Those authors then read from their works, and then there's an opportunity for the audience to
What time of day is that?
It is. The doors open at 6. It starts at 6:30 and runs to 8:30 on the first Thursday of each month.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, we have New York Times bestselling authors and Amazon bestselling authors. The Amazon bestselling authors, are a lot of them are self-published through what's called Kindle Direct Publishing. And they have literally international reader followings. So some of my friends will get up in the morning and say, wow, I'm wondering how many books we sold in India last night. Let's mm-hmm. see. Or I'm going to be online in a Zoom today. I'm going to be talking to folks in Australia in my book club there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have fascinating people. So there's this very rich intellectual life in the villages. Now, you ask me, am I writing a book? Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you, Mike. How old are you?
Well, I feel about 55 most of the time. I'm over 75.
Okay. Well, remember when you were trying to get to 70, when you were kind of making that turn? When it came for me and I started rounding the bend and seeing 70 ahead, I realized, that's no poop old. 70 is kind of old. That's a big milestone in life. You really are making the transition. You're not a kid anymore. You're not 50s. So I started writing poems. I just found it was a very disciplined way to force yourself to think in a focused way. With my involvement with the Writers League, I had a lot of folks, I would read a couple of my poems at my meetings, and they said, you ought to put that in a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I now have on my website, which is Frank A. Lancione, LANCIONE.com. So it's my family website. If you go there, there's a tab that says Poems on Love and Life, and there's a draft of the book. It's called Sunset Years, Poems for Seniors Who Still Love Life and Each Other.
Mm.
So there's 100 poems. They cover everything from still loving your spouse to still wanting to succeed and really increase physically, to grandkids and what's that like, to tours and, you know, cruising the Caribbean. So that's online, and I'm getting some interesting feedback, and I plan to publish that in the fourth quarter.
Okay, and you're going to publish it on this Kindle Direct?
Most likely publish on Kindle Direct. I'm going to be talking to a couple of publishing houses now over the next 30 to 60 days. As a new publisher, as a new author who's not done this before, I've written 5 children's books, which you can do. You can self-publish and have them printed, and then I would give them to my family members for Christmas. So my kids have stories, adventure stories written for my grandkids in which it's in their neighborhood, their school, their name, things that we actually did when we visited them, because my grandkids are in Seattle. So we would visit a museum, and then I would the next year write a story about something that happened at the museum. And they turn out to be the hero and heroine of the book. And so that was kind of fun when they were growing up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've recently taken a 10,000-mile trip around the U.S. in an RV. What motivated you to do that?
So I want to take you back to December of 2020. Okay.
December of 2020.
There were no therapeutics for COVID. We were told that if you touched something somebody else had touched, you could catch COVID from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
There were going to be vaccines, but there weren't any at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a year and a half since we saw our family. We had made 2 attempts to go out to Washington State to visit them in Seattle, and both times the governor, we were going to make a 4-day trip just to be there for a few days during Thanksgiving. The governor said, if you come, you got to stay 2 weeks quarantine before you can do your 4 days. So that wasn't going to work. We didn't feel comfortable driving in a car. We didn't feel comfortable about flying because we didn't know, you know, if you're driving and staying in motels, whose face was on the pillow.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, you know what? We've had an interest in RVing. I wonder if we could get an RV and cross the country and visit our family that way.
So you bought an RV, or did you rent an RV?
No, bought an RV. You ever have one of those good things happen? We bought an RV on the last afternoon of the last day of the last week of the last quarter of 2020.
They were motivated to sell.
And I was motivated to buy. And we got a good, very, very, very good deal. And they got a good deal, too, because they sold one more thing before they closed for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a very nice RV, small one, about 26 feet,
mm-hmm.
and across the country, had a tow car. And we thought, well, you know, we don't know if we're going to love this or hate this, but we know if we're going all the way out to Seattle, maybe we should see some things around the way. It ended up being a philosophically transformative trip. Have you ever driven through the West?
Yes, I have, a couple of times.
Okay. I had not.
Oh.
I had not. So a couple of things. When we set this, one of the things that I thought about was, you know, if you were going to spend 3 months touring another country, when you came back, people wouldn't say, gee, what did you see? They would ask that question, but they'd also say,
what were the highlights?
What were those people like?
Oh.
You lived for 3 months among the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You substituted that.
Take two. What were the highlights of the trip?
So for us, one of the real highlights was not just seeing things, but the talking to people. And if you were going to Europe and spending 3 months, somebody would say, I know you saw a lot of cathedrals, but what were the people like? And so that was one of the things we wanted to discover. Now, a little bit of history. I'm from a small town, very small town. My wife is from a very small town. We grew up in kind of classic American values. And we turn on the TV and we see all these people who don't even like our country on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, is that the majority of people? Is that what the people in the little towns like we grew up with, do they feel that way? So one of the things I did was I asked people as we were going across the country. I would be in a Walmart, at a McDonald's, in a national park, at a truck stop, in an RV park, and strike up a conversation with somebody and say, hey, I got to ask you a question. What do you think of our country? Some people are kind of unhappy with us. What do you think? You know what I found?
No, tell us about what people said.
You're not on a college campus. You go to a Walmart. It doesn't matter what the race, the creed is. You're standing in line. You're joking with somebody. And you say, hey, isn't this a great place to live? And you know what they say? Yes, it is. We're lucky to be here.
How did you record their comments?
I wrote 21 blogs that talked a lot, and they're on my website, that talked a lot about what we were learning and what we were learning about people. And then there was another dimension. So the first observation is the average person out there, they feel blessed to be an American. Yeah, they understand we got some problems, but they don't hate the country, and they're not trying to bring it down. They love the country. The second thing I found was very personal. You drive across the deserts. You drive through the mountains. You see what it's like to see the open plains and the prairies.
Mm-hmm.
And you suddenly realize something when people say, oh, I hate America. Well, they're really talking about the political structures of America. They've mm-hmm. actually never seen America. They've never seen those mountains, those valleys, those beautiful areas. When you see the physical beauty of the country, particularly in the West, you go to Bryce Canyon and you see this endless array of hoodoos. You go the Going to the Sun Road in Glacier National Park and you can't believe it. You feel like you're going to get to the sun. Those things help put in perspective. We're just like another species here. We're like the bison or the squirrels or whatever you'd like to pick. And that actually has an interesting thing. If we're not the center of the universe, then maybe our problems aren't the center of the universe. Maybe all these things that we think are so important, maybe they're not that important.
Good. Frank, I want to thank you for joining us today on Open Forum of the Villages. And if any of our listeners are interested in hearing the rest of the interview, sign up for a subscription for the bonus content where this episode will continue. Good. Now we can continue, and we're out over the end of 15 minutes.
Okay.
So, Frank, earlier you mentioned that you have a family website. Could you tell our listeners about what the organization is of a family website, your perspective?
It's something that is not that hard to do. And it's something I think a lot of people should consider. When we were going on this trip, we wanted a place to be able to communicate with our friends and family. But we didn't think it was the best thing to put on Facebook that we were going to be gone for 3 months. It's sort of like a kick me sign or a come rob me sign.
Yes.
And even if you try to limit the number of people, it's just not a good thing because you don't know how stuff is getting reposted. So I chartered through GoDaddy a website, and I used it primarily for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really got into writing blogs, and I really got into posting my pictures there. Mm-hmm. And it was totally locked down. Well, then when I got home, I opened it up so anybody could see it. Then I started adding my clubs. So I have web pages for my clubs. I used to be on Facebook. I sort of haven't done much with Facebook in the last 2 years, but I did use it for posting poems. And so I had a lot of poems on Facebook. I took those off Facebook and put them on my personal website, and that has now evolved into a book of poetry with 100 poems. And my wife and I are celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary in June of 2022, so this coming June. So I have a tab called Half Century, and I plan to put, we're going to have a little party. I plan to put the video of that party up. So what happens is you start to build the story of your life. In the Writers League of the Villages, there's many people in our age group who've decided, when I'm gone, what will be left? What will my kids know about me? What will my grandkids know about me?
Posterity.
Yeah, and I, you know, I love my grandpa. He, my dad, and I worked on the farm on weekends, and it was just great. And he died when I was 14. I don't really remember as much as I wish I did about him, and I loved him.
Mm-hmm.
He was a part of my life. I walked a quarter mile to get to his house to see him. But I don't know what he thought about things. I don't remember what he did personally. I don't know about the parts of his life that I was too young to understand. So I think, so people come to the Writers League and they get in the memoir groups. Well, I think of the family website as a living memoir. It's now a record of our lives. And you go back and fill things in.
Repeat. Go back and fill things in.
So I think of the website as a kind of a living memoir, a memoir where you're actually documenting things and sharing things along the way.
But Frank, I did want to point out to our listeners something that, you brought up that actually is a problem. And I'm just going to pick on Facebook. You said you deleted some content from Facebook. In fact, you may have deleted it from the current version of Facebook today or whatever the day was that you did that. But Frank, did you know there's a website or a series of websites called History of the Web?
No.
Yes, there are sites that track websites, and you can turn the clock back in history, and you could see a website from 2001, let's say. Everything that was available on the web on that particular day. So
now we're into a new topic, Mike, and that is, in this world, who are you? Because in the world our grandparents grew up, you were always you. If you were an author, you wrote a book.
Right.
Maybe you had an essay that you wrote or some little scrap that you sent. Maybe you kept cards from family. But today, you are the you that's physical and the you that has every electronic signature you've ever made. I find it interesting to get online and find they know every address I've ever been at.
Yes, our personal information has transcended going beyond the real web to the black web and being sold and resold. And
now
you can't do anything about that.
Now, that's the negative. I'm going to emphasize the Mike Roth positive.
The positive is that if you want to go back and see what the history was, you can actually turn back the clock. People can change their websites.
I think there's another positive.
Hmm.
For the first time, you get some say over your publicity, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, all lives have challenges,
mm-hmm.
and all lives have rewarding and wonderful things. So you get to show those pictures of your grandkids. You get to talk about what you learned from a cross-country trip.
Mm-hmm.
You get to post a love poem to your wife.
And having it on your own website, to a great degree, you can control who sees it.
Yes. That's interesting. I'm writing love poems to my wife on the eve of our 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering when my grandkids get to be in their 50s, if they'll wonder, gee, I wonder what grandpa would they get to see who I was.
Yes.
For better or worse.
For better or worse. And if you want your website to continue beyond your own demise, because you probably have to pay to have your website posted, your domain name carried forward, you'd have to put that into your will with an executor's amount of money set aside so that every year or every 2 years or every 3 years, your executor pays the website company, the hosting company, and pays the website domain registrar to keep your domain name active.
So I think there's some, there's probably some other methodologies that will go forward. Like you talked about the history of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You can also publish electronically and you'll be a part of a catalog that's available forever. I don't think Amazon drops books. I think they just drop them in their listing. So once you're published on Amazon, those books are probably always in their electronic files.
I never thought of that. That's probably true.
Yeah. There's also the Library of Congress. When you store a book with the Library of Congress, it becomes part of a permanent file.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for the first time...
The book, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Your website, that's another story.
Websites you have to make a provision for.
If you want it to continue long after you're gone, you have to come up with a way to keep it out there. And you have to make a decision whether you want it to be publicly accessible or accessible by a limited group of people, which is something new in our society. Usually people could write what they wanted to be on their epitaph on their tombstone. However, now we have a scenario where I have a friend, Ed, who died about 10 years ago. And Ed's still listed on Facebook.
Of course he is. They actually want you to have an executor.
Mm-hmm. Now they do. Originally, they didn't. Ed died before that requirement. and I don't know whether it's his mom or someone else that has kept Ed's information alive. And that's something that I think in our later years we really need to address.
So you're opening up a very interesting topic of discussion. There was a person by the name of William Gibson, very, very popular science fiction writer. About 20 years ago or more, this would be in the early to mid 90s, he started putting out books. It was just when the internet was coming in, books like The Mona Lisa Overdrive. And what he did as a science fiction writer was he jumped into the future and conceptualized a world in which people had an online life after their physical life.
Mm.
And so he thought all about the implications of that, what it was like, what the person was trying to do. And so they existed on the internet after their physical life had gone away. Now, sound like anything to you? Does it by any chance sound like the metaverse that the founder of Facebook has talked about?
Yes. It really is, I'm going to call it the beginning of another chapter. And with artificial intelligence, they can add more and more.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is, so in the Zoom world, right, we all Zoomed for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suppose that instead of Zoom, we were in the metaverse and... you decided, you know, I don't really want to have my picture up there. I want to have my avatar up there. I'm going to have a picture of a gorilla up there. I'm the big gorilla in this meeting, and I'm going to have a picture of a gorilla up there, and that's going to be me. So this whole thing of who am I? Who am I, where am I, and how am I to live to be happy? And, you know, I'm living now physically. How do I live on? In
yes.
terms of my digital presence afterwards.
I think we all did too many Zooms and you know, I created a whole library of backgrounds beyond the standard ones that they offered. You know, I could be on the Starship Enterprise or in young Sheldon's living room. And even in Zoom, they gave you the ability to change your facial appearance. Yes, to darken your eyebrows, to put a mustache on, to put a beard on, to change some colors. And that was the beginning. Zoom also had the ability to put on hats.
I remember that. I have a picture of me with a turkey hat on.
Well, in our improvisational theater club, we have a great routine that's tremendously funny called Questions with Hats. And in improv, the players are instructed never to ask questions of another player on stage because that puts pressure on the other player and doesn't make them look good. But in the hat scene, they have to ask questions about the character represented by the hat that they're wearing or the hat that the other player is wearing. Well, we do public performances, large stage shows. Next one is October 28th, and we do club performances. Well, for one of the smaller venues, we bought a cymbal so we could do, you know, when they hit the snare drum and they hit the cymbal, a rim shot. And the club owns a cymbal. And so we were doing the questions with hats scene, and one of the villagers had a 22-year-old daughter who was studying improv in college. And she gets up to play in this questions with hats scene. And at the bottom of the box of hats is the cymbal. And she puts the cymbal on the top of her head.
I love it.
And she says for her line, "Do I look cymbal-minded?" Always a lot of fun. Improv meets on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 8:30 at Rohan, the first four Mondays of the month. And if you're interested, go out to the web and look at thevillagesimprov.com, and you get the whole picture of what the club does.
So I'd like to go back to your discussion on Zoom for a second. In January of 2020, the Villages pretty much closed off the rec centers. And
they did.
There are five or six discussion clubs, the Philosophy Club, the Free Thinkers Club, the Humanist Club, Civil Discourse Central, Civil Discourse South, Science and Technology. There's more, but it's a very rich mix of people who like to put together informative TED-type talks, deliver those, and then getting into meaningful discussion with the audience. And people find that very rewarding. I would compare it to the old Royal Society talks in Britain where somebody would write a scholarly paper and deliver it just to provoke discussion and try to add to understanding. Well, all these clubs face the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're now isolated. We can't be face-to-face. What do we do? I believe it was the Free Thinkers or the Humanists, might have been the Humanists, was the first club to start with Zoom, trying to do some Zoom broadcasts and make that available. Our club, Civil Discourse Central and Civil Discourse South, we were not the first, but we were probably within the first three clubs to do that. And we saved the clubs.
Yeah.
And to a large percent, to a large extent, we also saved our members. We had a license that topped out at 100 people in the first couple of months. We would get close to 100 people on a Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, people got Zoomed out.
Absolutely.
They got Zoomed out. Now,
especially on those bigger meetings.
Yes.
I mean, the Village Improv Club during the times that the rec centers were closed down for about 18 months, we had all of our meetings online, which turned out to be exceptionally positive. They were good meetings, but they also allowed the villagers who were snowbirds to participate,
right?
Which is difficult if the meeting is live.
So we learned a couple of things out of that. First, we pushed Zoom, I won't say to its limits, but we exploited everything we could out of it. So we would have, let's say on an average day, 70 people online in the first half of that year. We would have the presentation, then we would do a poll, an electronic poll, so people could participate.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would use the breakout feature to break them into small groups where they could talk.
Mm-hmm.
Then would we bring them back, and then we would use the raise your hand feature for people to ask questions back and forth. So we tried to duplicate a lot of the two-way dialogue that you would get in a face-to-face session. We're pretty successful with that, and people appreciated that during that period of time when they didn't feel they could actually get out of their house. The reason that we have both a Civil Discourse Central and a Civil Discourse South is that pre-pandemic, if you were to go back about 5 years ago, when you came to a Civil Discourse Club meeting at Colony,
okay. Cool.
There'd be 110 seats and 170 people in line.
Mm-hmm.
And people would wait and couldn't get in, and it was very frustrating. So we had a similar situation up at Savannah, because we were even repeating the same talks in Savannah.
Yeah.
That's led to us saying, you know what, we need to get a club down south. And so the Southern Club is a little different. But when we approached John Rohan, we went with a technology vision that said, here's what the future looks like. You're in that room, but you're using some sort of software to broadcast offsite too. That allows snowbirds to participate. It allows shut-ins to participate, people who are in, let's say, a memory care unit but used to go. It allows somebody who's visually impaired to watch it on their phone so they can blow it up to the size mm-hmm. they want. It allows us to tape those sessions and create a knowledge repository. Most of the clubs have abandoned Zoom broadcasts now.
Mm-hmm.
But so the Civil Discourse South, I've continued them. It's a lot of work to do a simultaneous Zoom broadcast, but it allows me to tape the session. And on my website, I have a repository of past talks.
Mm-hmm.
So we're building a very rich knowledge base. So you can be anywhere in the country at any time and see a talk.
So if you have live people in the room, how many people do you have in the room?
We're rebuilding the club because I was gone 3 months. So we'll get like between 15 and 25, depending on the speaker.
So you have a computer camera pointed at the people in the room?
Nope, pointed at the speaker.
Pointed at the speaker.
And the slides are being shown. So at the same time, we might have anywhere between 20 and 35 online people. So it's a talk could be, let's say, 25 to 30, or it could be 50 people. It's combined in the room and simultaneous views.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's on the website and it'll get subsequent views.
That's an interesting idea. I've toyed with that and used it in the M-Benz Club, Mercedes-Benz Club here in the Villages, for board of directors meetings when if I didn't do that, I wasn't going to have a quorum. And it had worked to some degree, but I found it to be less than perfect.
Let me go a different way. It depends on what the intellectual content is. Mm-hmm. Suppose Mercedes-Benz sent an engineer to speak to the club.
Well, that would be a speaker, and it's easier.
Yeah.
When you have
The intellectual content is it. Somebody would actually tune in to say, boy, if this guy's going to tell us what the new engine's going to be like, I want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for a board meeting, although if you were deciding something important, they might.
Yeah, we did. We got more people to come to the meeting during the periods that we were doing it. But in terms of saving the results beyond taking the minutes out of what happened. We didn't. Even in the improv club, for the most part, I believe we destroyed all of the video recordings of the meetings that we had.
Stop.
Frank, thanks for joining us today for this bonus episode. And our listeners who want to sign up for bonus episodes, you'll find that as a button at the bottom of the BuzzFeed feed for the show, as well as over on Apple iTunes podcasts. Thanks again for being part of the show, Frank.
Thank you. Now, I actually wanted to ask you a question. Can I ask you a question?
Well, let me stop the recordings.